Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for Palm Sunday, an early Sunday for Palm Sunday, March 16th. Welcome, Tim.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, this afternoon it was a good-looking day, but I ended up working on a lot of political computer work and watching the Georgia Bulldogs cap off probably the best four-game run in their basketball history.
It was almost like the good Lord was smiling on us, David, giving us this feel-good story after the terrible storms and things this weekend. But it was the most improbable run I've ever seen a college basketball team make in a three-day period.
Yes, and it couldn't happen to a nicer guy with Dennis Felt than a guy that cleaned up a mess of a program with a lot of
character. And I want to right now say something to all the Georgia folks that are listening. You have a good coach, folks. Sign this man to a long-term contract and keep him there.
Yes. Well, before I preview for the show, you mentioned the tornado damage. And, of course, we felt that in our area, even harder than Atlanta as far as human loss, with some people actually passing away in both my county of Floyd and one south in Polk County. But on the damage side of Atlanta, have you ever heard an estimate of how much damage was done?
No, there it's looking like it's going to be really bad, though, David. Around the Georgia Dome there, from the pictures and all, I saw it just looked like a war zone. That had to be a frightening moment the other night for the 33,000 people that were inside the dome when windows blew out and the wind started ripping through the place. And a whole lot of people have been hurt, a whole lot of homes lost, and it's just really sad. And 2 days of it, too.
Yes, in different places. I was actually down in Atlanta on Wednesday, had Hawks tickets. I guess I had the right night in some ways and the wrong night in others. They lost the game on Wednesday, but while they won on Friday, I don't know that I would have wanted to be down in that. Although the Phillips Arena had no substantial damage, that big steel structure is built correctly, apparently.
Yeah, and I was also on a personal note. My son, oldest son, lives over on the Hall Gwinnett line. They actually saw a funnel cloud a few hundred yards from their house. And, of course, I was, you know, on pins and needles a little bit about them and thankful that all of them are okay.
Yes. Well, I guess the reason people turn into the show is politics. So let's do a little preview on what we got going on. We are going to announce the congressional candidate for the 11th district in probably about 7 minutes. Big thing on the Kudzu Vine. He's made it around a little bit, and so it's not going to be a huge secret to everybody, but just for the larger blogosphere, this will be his premiere. We're going to launch his website during the show, so some exciting stuff there. And then in the second half hour, Jim Spearman, the executive director of the Democratic Party of Alabama, is going to join us because Alabama's starting to heat up a little bit. We've had some retirements, both Republican and Democrat, so there's some seats to defend, some seats to win. They have a Senate race, too, and just another interesting state for politics in the South. So we'll have those two big calls. But until we have our congressional candidate come on, Jim Martin and U.S. Senate here in Georgia, the rumors were at one level, and they seemed – and actually, I think Jane Kidd alluded to a rumor of someone. This may not even be who she was alluding to, for all we know. But the rumors kind of heat up a little more. Tim, what's your first thought there?
Well, I you know what, I don't think he's going to do it. My gut just tells me that he's not going to do this. It's almost as if there are certain people in the party that don't seem to be that happy with the announced candidates that we have, and they go around looking for, what am I trying to say, a power name to throw into the mix. Speaking of which, David, tell me about that rumor that you were mentioning earlier that you had heard.
Well, just talking about the Jim Martin thing, I had actually heard, because I think everybody knows how close the Martin brothers all are, I had heard from a source, and, you know, I talked to so many people, it's hard to know where it was for somebody, but that Joe Martin is not in favor of his brother running. I mean, it's just like he doesn't think it's a good idea for his brother. It's obviously if his brother ran, he would support him. I'm almost positive of that, but then it's not like if he said, hey, is this a good idea? He's not really thinking that's such a good idea. I'm just wondering, I mean, obviously it seems to be getting pushed at the state party level, and, you know, the executive director, Matt White, worked on his staff. It could be a case where, you know, Matt White knows this will help other, or he feels it'll help other things, and he's maybe pushing this. I don't know if that's the right way to do business. I mean, we had in 2006 where there was rumors that the state party was being run by one campaign and not the other, and that was unfair. And even though we don't have heavyweights this time like Kath Cox and Mark Taylor, it still would not be fair to have one candidate getting all the push from the state party, whereas the other ones don't.
Do you think it's possible that somebody just floated his name out to the media to see what the reaction might be?
Possibility, and I know there's that poll that came out that was supposed to be the DSCC. Now I've heard it was a different group in Georgia, but, you know, it showed that Saxby Chambliss's re-elect number is in the low 40s. And it shows the Democratic candidate is within striking distance. You know, it's so hard to know when you do all these different polls what means what. I mean, you have to think that if a candidate had money and a decent background, the money is, of course, the critical thing at this point, then they could actually take it and make a run of it with Saxby Chambliss. And this was looking to be a strong Democratic year. I mean, we won Dennis Hastert's seat back. And people are saying that points to, if you look at electability trends, a 50-seat pickup in the Congress. Well, a 50-seat pickup in the Congress, you'd have to think that a state like Georgia would be put in play, at no less. With those,
I don't know, David. A 50-seat pickup is, that's beyond our wildest dreams.
Yes, that's all, but I'm just saying people are showing that. Well, what they did is they're saying, hey, if you look at Haster's reelect numbers and you look at seats that, if you look, put it on a competitive scale, there were 49 seats that were more competitive than his. That's where they get that from. By no means do I actually think 450 will be where it comes out at. But, I mean, really, yeah, given that how 2006 was, if we had a 30-seat pickup, which, you know, is only 60% of the prediction, that's still an incredible huge year where we expand our majority to you know, in very, very powerful numbers.
It would be, but I got to be honest, a 10 to 15 seat pickup is far more realistic. Secondly, we're talking about the 14th district of Illinois as opposed to Georgia. While the state is not ruby red, it's a pretty good dark shade of red at the moment. Even with low approval ratings, you've got to think Saxby Chambliss would be a fairly decent favorite. Another thing about Martin jumping in, now you mentioned the money. Here it is, mid-March. A name like Martin, he might could jump in and grab the nomination, but it goes a lot deeper than that. He'd have to put together a staff real quick and raise an awful lot of money in a big hurry. It'd be a tall order, Dave.
Well, that brings two things. One, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, if you were going to run for the Senate nomination and put a strong effort in, I think you had to get in no later than 12 months before Election Day.
Yeah.
And we've had candidates that have done that. If you count Josh Lanier's exploratory committee, I believe that means Del Cardwell, Vernon Jones, Josh Lanier, Who else am I missing? Rand Knight. They all did that. Maggie Martinez,
right.
I guess, is very close to that 12-month. So that means pretty much all the candidates did that. So that means you don't have the time. Now, putting together his staff, now, I don't know how familiar you were with his 2006 lieutenant gubernatorial run, but he could put his staff together real quickly.
Well,
that's because it's his family. I mean,
right. I was about to say he had a lot of family members. Yeah.
So I mean, and now that's a discussion for another time on how wise a move that is. I mean, you know, if a great football player comes along, I mean, should his coach be his father or, you know, family member, brother, whatever it is? I mean,
yeah.
We could debate that point at times.
Maybe we should be saying something to these folks that keep pining for this big power name to come in and sweep us to victory. It just could be that we've got our team out there running right now and that there is going to be none of these, quote, big power names to jump in.
Well, and if I would say if somebody's like, oh, if, you know, this power name jumps in and I'm going to write a $1,000 check to him, why not meet all these guys and girls in the race now and you know, give one of them $1,000? I mean, you
right.
know, why not get on board with something that's there? I don't know. I think if this would have come along a while back, it would have made a lot more sense, but now it's just like a bit like desperation. It's kind of, and of course now, you know, Jim Barton has nothing to lose like Denise Majette did with her congressional seat, but it was like when she got in the race, so late last time, she could win the nomination, but
right.
She couldn't do much more. But I think she would have had a much better race if she would have gotten in earlier in the process.
And the person who could clear all of this up, Jim Martin himself, has remained strangely silent. I really wish he would make a public comment.
Well, and I've heard rumors of Monday. I've heard rumors of Wednesday. You know, there's the speech at the Mid-Fulton Democrats, but it's hard to say. Well, it's time for our first big caller announcement. This is going to be the 11th District Congressional candidate. And I'll go ahead and say the name because it's only polite to introduce somebody with their name. Mr. Bud Gammon, how you doing?
Very good, Dave. How are you guys tonight?
Oh, glad you could call in. I'm doing well. Tim?
Good evening, Mr. Gammon. This is Tim Shiflett. How you doing, sir?
Very good, Tim. Good to hear from you. And it's a beautiful day here in North Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Well, Mr. Gammon, tell us a little bit about your background. Some of us have been seeing you at events, and we sort of know you, but for the larger audience across the South and possibly the country, because we like to hear about congressional candidates running, they don't know you. So tell us about yourself.
Well, Dave, first of all, I was born and raised here in North Georgia, in Rome, Georgia, and went through the public schools here, graduated, and went to the Air Force Academy and graduated there in 1973. And I spent about 13 and a half years associated with the military as a pilot, and I now fly as a commercial airline pilot, one of the major airlines, and reside here in Rome, Georgia.
Yes, and so you were in the military. Tell us a little bit about that time in the military.
Well, when I was growing up here, this was called the 7th District of Georgia, and our representative was John W. Davis, who a lot of people here in Rome and North Georgia know of Wendy Davis. That's her uncle, and that's who I received my congressional nomination from. And I went out to Colorado Springs and spent 4 years there in college and military training. And when I graduated, I went for a year at Moody Air Force Base in Valdosta, Georgia. I had my chance to, I could have gone to any of the 11 bases around the country, but I was wanting to come home to Georgia. So I came and spent a year earning my Air Force wings, and then I went on to fly in the military for another 6.5 years active duty, and then I spent 2.5 years in the Air Force Reserves.
Yes, and I guess this would have been part of the Vietnam era. Did you fly in the Southeastern Theater?
I flew at the tail end of it when we were basically were leaving there, and I did operational missions where we were evacuating our embassy personnel and our remaining military officials out of Saigon. And I spent several missions in and out of Saigon and back to Clark Air Force Base in the Philippines, and also operated up on the Thailand-Cambodian border various times also, and removing our troops and our embassy personnel.
So it was a true statement, you are a combat flight veteran.
Well, I would like to consider that, and I do, but also the people that were serving in the heart of the battle sometimes, and I owe them, and we all owe them so much, that it's I do consider myself, because I earned a couple of ribbons from that, but the real veterans, the ground troops that were there in the heart of it, and a couple of years before that, are the true heroes of the Vietnam War.
Well, I can tell that you're a most modest person as well. Tim, do you have any questions for Mr. Gammon?
Yes, sir, and I wanted to ask you one immediately about your military service as it might apply in this race. Do you think your time in the military gives you a perspective on an issue like Iraq that your opponents might not have?
Well, I think my time in the military, and especially during the time of the certain war that we were involved in, the Vietnam War, has a lot of similarities to our involvement today, and I think so. And one of the things I wanted to point out is when I was talking to a lot of the friends I have that stayed in as a full career over 30 years, and some of them are two-star and generals and colonels, and when I talk with them, they certainly, I thought I was going to have a hard time at first explaining to them how I feel, and ironically, they all are lining up beside me and are telling me, Bud, that we've needed a voice like this in Congress. We need a voice that will stand up to what's been handed down and get the true advice that we need from our military leaders.
Okay. And the other question I wanted to ask you was about what you've been doing so far. You know, the 11th District, as you have probably already found out, is a pretty good-sized district. And I was wondering if you've been able to get around to some of the other areas of meeting and make some contacts around the district and how that's going.
We have. I've attended a few meetings, but we're getting ready to launch and really get our feet on the ground with an operational website, and then also making sure we get around. And one of the things that I want to make sure is to get around and shake hands and meet the people individually, and also let them know that my stance on several of the issues, and you may have some questions for me on those, to let them know. And I think what I want to make sure to the people of North Georgia is that I'm running for this because I think we all, in association with all the millions of people around the country, we're asking for change in Washington. And that's what my campaign is going to be all about, is that we're going to go to Washington and we're going to change inside the belt. And we are going to try to address the issues that face our country, and it's all about change. And I'm hoping to get the word out to, and it's been very receptive to several of the counties that are in the 11th District. I've been invited in the near future to speak there, and I'm hoping to come down even more and just shake hands and sit down and talk and answer questions and let people know what this campaign is all about.
Okay, and before I turn it back over to David, I wanted to invite you. We meet every third Monday in the month, and we're meeting tomorrow night up in Somerville at the Chattooga County Senior Center. It'd be easy for you to get directions. You can come join us. We'd love to have you.
I would be thrilled to. And if you would, if you could send me those directions and email those to me after this, I can give you my email if you don't have it, and I'd be happy to join you.
Okay, thank you, sir. David?
Yes. Well, you had mentioned going onto your website, and it's one of you to donate or volunteer, they go to budgammon.us, and they can see all about that there. So I'll let people know, what are some things that you're hoping to get people involved in activity-wise?
Well, what we want to do is, and again, it's going to be a door-to-door campaign. We are trying to enlist the help and the support of the people of all of the 11th District. And I think during the next few months, what it's going to take is a door-to-door, let people know and enlist them to go tell their neighbors. I know there's a lot of people in the past that haven't participated in voting, and then all of a sudden, as we've seen in some of the presidential primaries, it's quite a turnout unusual for the other years in the past. So we're getting people activated, getting people registered, and getting ready to go make that change, and that's what we want to do.
Yes. Also, we were talking a little bit about Iraq and your experience. Now, your time as a commercial pilot has actually brought you into being involved in the war in kind of a sad way. What can you tell us about that?
Well, the airline I fly for, our hub is located in Philadelphia, and the recovery base for our troops that come home wounded or otherwise is at Dover Air Force Base, just about 40 miles from there. And because we're the largest carrier, we unfortunately are tasked with making sure that our troops make their way home. And when I come up many, many times to the gate, if I see a soldier in full dress uniform, I know why he's there, but I always go over and ask him, you know, are you here because I think you are? And he nods, and I say, come on down with me. And I take him down ahead of all the passengers, and I put him in first class, and I tell him I'll come get him when the time is right. And, of course, they bring our fallen soldier to the airplane on the baggage cart, and I get him. And if I'm there, if I'm the captain of the airplane, I always go below with him. And he goes through a ceremony where we load him on the airplane, and I always take two steps back beside him, but I salute with him, and we board that individual. But I try to make sure also his escort, when we come back up, that he's in first class, and we talk for a little bit, and almost everyone on the airplane knows why that young man is there. So it brings it home quite a bit to me, and it happens quite often just because we are so close to the recovery base there at Dover Air Force Base, Delaware. It's just about 40 miles away from the Philadelphia International Airport.
Yes, that just really brings it right there to you. And that's going to give
David,
you perspective.
It does, Dave, because also the escort, he always knows his name, his age, what province he was killed in, and knows all the information. And of course, it's his job to deliver this young man to his family, it's quite a sobering experience. And after it happened so many times, too, it just brings it home. But it's done quite professionally, and it does. You know, you come home. I always go on the internet. I write the name down, and I try to find where what happened. Was it an IED, or was it just a rifle shot, or exactly what happened, and try to know a little something about this man.
Yes. Well, that's the kind of perspective we need if we're going to bring this thing to a resolution. People that have had experience, people that are still experiencing it in a real way, not just trying to, you know, not think about it. Like sometimes I think some folks seem to have that perspective. They just want to talk the talking points of a party and not actually deal with the real issue. Well, Well, also, I guess getting this more in your bio, you had actually had some experiences in high school that was unique at that time. You were actually a top-flight athlete. Tell us about that high school experience.
Oh, you asked me to brag on myself, but I can do that. But I tell you what, in high school, I had some of the best coaches in the whole world. My father passed away when I was 13. And when I was in high school, almost the whole coaching staff, I almost wanted to call them my dad because they took a special interest with me, and I just admire them, and they're just was a great bunch. And that's the reason I try to think I was a pretty good athlete, and I was, but I also had some great guidance from the coaches at East Rome High School. And while I was there, I became a member of the East Rome wrestling team and joined that my sophomore year. And my sophomore year, my very first year, I wrestled all the way up to the state championship, and I finished second. My junior year, I finished, I was the first person ever from Rome, Georgia, to win the state wrestling championship. And in my senior year, I again made it all the way to the finals, and I placed second. So my wrestling record over 3 years was 64-3, and two of those losses were for the state championship, but I did win it my junior year. And during my stay there, I was awarded the Golden Helmet Award that was presented by the Coca-Cola Company. I won that 2 out of 3 years as a football player on the East Rome varsity team also. So, and as my sophomore year at the academy, I received a letter, and actually the academy let me come home for the ceremony, but I was inducted into the East Rome High School Athletic Hall of Fame in 1970.
Yes, and so that's quite some honors and something to be proud of. I guess while we're on your high school days, given that race has kind of interjected itself into Democratic politics, it's my understanding that your class at East Rome was the first integrated graduating class. Do I have that correct?
That's correct.
So, what experiences do you think that'll bring to you?
Well, when we entered our freshman year, and growing up in Rome, Georgia, there was Maine High School, and we were, all those years, they had an elementary and a high school, and we were completely segregated. Our freshman year, we entered an integrated school, and some of the greatest people in the world, and who I still remember, the athletes that came on board, the students and the athletes, and the contribution they made to East Rome High School were just unbelievable. Iris Kennebrew was just an outstanding All-American at East Rome, and she went on to be, after she graduated, went to college, she came back and was the high school varsity coach at East Rome High School and led them to very successful years. And she's just a wonderful athlete, and more importantly, she's just a wonderful person also.
Yes, so just another background experience that you can bring to things. Well, I guess we talked a lot about foreign policy. What do you see as some of the issues domestically that we need to tackle?
Well, we've got a lot of issues, and Dave, you may have seen when they come on right now on the program, and not to divert against answering questions, I'll get right to it, domestic issues. But, you know, they right now they're listing saying, you know, well, the people right now, and this is the news people saying, well, now the economy has come the number one, then Iraq, and then immigration, and then insurance and health programs. But at first I want to say, as long as there's one American life being lost, that becomes my very first issue always. But then because of this road we've been led down, we've got quite a mess as far as our economic situation. As we all know, just millions of people that are losing their homes, and so it's that's going to be quite a problem facing our economic issues. The Republicans have said, well, we're going to give everybody this $300, and if you have a dependent, $600, and that ought to fix this thing. Well, I don't think that's going to do the job. You know, saying, okay, I'll be able to take my family out, maybe buy them a bicycle. That's not the answer to the recession that we've been led down in. You just don't get there overnight. This has been over several years led by the Republican administration. And so it's going to take a lot of work to get us out of this recession and to work hard to restore us as an economic leader in the world. The other issue, as we all know, is in the news, immigration. And I think the things that we're going to have to do, you can't just, the Republican administration has said, we're just going to turn our back on this. We're not going to do anything. There was a bill passed 2.5 years ago by the Senate, and then the House, when it was still controlled by the Republicans, turned it down. And that bill provided for increased Border Patrol guards. And it provided for a lot of issues in there to give a path. And whenever I say I give the path to the immigrants here, the illegal ones, everybody says, oh, you're going to let them get a path to the front. No, they're going to get in the back of the line. but we are going to work on giving them a path to citizenship. And again, it's not going to the head of the line. Here's a list of things. It's going to be a lot of hard work. You got 5 years to do it if you don't. And of course, anybody that is listed on as committed criminal offenses, they're not eligible for the program either. They have to leave right away. But this gives us an opportunity to the 12 and 14 million people. We can at least try to identify them, find out where they're located. We have their contact. They can start paying taxes, paying Social Security, and give them a path to this to citizenship in the United States. And then, of course, we our health insurance program. That's our other big domestic issue. And we have got a lot of work to go there. There's been bills before Congress, and we just turned one down about a year ago that would have given 12 million children health insurance, and again, the Republicans voted that down. So those are some of the issues we've got to work at, and it's time for it. It's time for a change, and it's time for us to address these problems.
Yes, and also I know that you're a airline pilot, and a lot of your colleagues were more Republican-leaning in the past, but now you've told me that a lot of them are starting to become more Democratic because of pension issues. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts on that issue.
I'm sorry, about what issue there?
Retirement pensions.
Oh, pension, I'm sorry. And for a long time, and I fly with some of the most professional, some of the most the greatest people in the world, and I'd put my family, the training that we go through every 6 months, I mean, I would put my daughter and any of my sisters, my family, I'd put them on their airplane any day. I wouldn't care what the weather is. But what's happened over here is government has allowed the airlines to, while their executives are making millions and millions and millions of dollars every month, actually, not just their yearly pension, but at the same time allowing them to take pensions away from us that have worked for over 30 years, and all of a sudden you're getting right at your retirement date, and all of a sudden they have been allowed to discontinue those, and they've handed it over to the government program called the PBGC, and they actually are about going broke because they're having all of a sudden we're dumped with all these pensions from United Airlines, U.S. Airways, Delta, and they weren't expecting that. So that's something that we need to work toward, trying to restore pensions to these people and making the work rules protect the employees. And which brings up a good point, Dave, on as far as political contributions, I'm accepting only contributions from individuals, except for if it is a union, such as any members of the AFL-CIO, I will accept a contribution. But other than that, it will just be from individuals. I will not accept it from lobbyists, insurance companies, and various lobbyist organizations.
So true worker unions like the AFL-CIO, the NEA, the government unions, those kind of things.
That's yes. Correct. And just so you know, when my father worked for 25 years in the cotton mills of North Georgia, and while he worked there, he became involved with the AFL-CIO, and he worked for those 25 years also, trying to work for a fair day's pay for fair day's work, and he did that for 25 years of his life. And since I could walk, I was taught about unions and could comprehend those issues. I was taught about unions and the work that my father did here. He was very closely associated, in fact, from an individual up there where Tim's from. Their lawyer at that time was Bobby Lee Cook, and he worked closely with my father as they tried to work toward improving the working conditions here in the cotton mills.
Yeah. Well, Tim, do you have any more questions?
No, yes, sir. One obvious one I had. Let's say a person's listening to you tonight and they say, you know, I like the sound of this guy and I'd really like to help him. Before we have to let you go, Mr. Gammon, won't you give us any contact info that anybody would need to get hold of you?
Tim, they can get hold of me several ways. I can answer by way of the website we mentioned at buttgammon.com. Also, I have the number that I'm actually talking to you on right now. If I'm not available, and it's 706-844-5205, and if there's something they want to talk about, if there's an issue saying, well, you didn't talk about this on that show, or you said this, but I disagree with you, I'm happy and I'm open to listen to other opinions, but they can contact me there. And also on the website is a published mailing address. So I think the best way they could contact me is through the website. But again, I'm happy to answer a personal phone call. If I don't answer you, it will go, as most people, go to a voicemail. But one of the things, and I hope to make this true when I'm in Washington, and I hope to, it will be true, that when somebody calls me from the 11th District, if I can't get to them right then, there's a reason why, and I will get back to them, or a member of the staff will get to them as just as quick as we can and answer the questions. And that's why I think it's important that we make a change in Washington, that I'm here, I'm receptive to listening to the people of North Georgia, and I think we're going to make this change, Tim.
All righty. Thank you, David. Well, Mr. Gammon, it was great having you on and announcing your campaign, and we'll look forward to having you in the future on the Kudzu Vine and seeing you around the campaign trail. Once again, budgammon.com. I think there'll be a lot of buzz about it, and different people can get on there and donate and volunteer and endorse you. Well, thanks again.
Thank you, Dave and Tim. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow night.
All right. Good night. Excellent. Okay. Well,
thank you, gentlemen.
Yes, well, that was quite exciting to announce a congressional candidate on the show. But now we move into our next caller. The executive director of the Alabama Democratic Party joins us, Jim Spearman. Jim, how you doing?
Fine. How are y'all?
Oh, doing well. You're on with Tim Shiflett as well.
Good. Good. Hey.
How are you, sir?
Good, Tim. How are you?
Yes, well, Jim, you're over there at the Alabama Democratic Party. You've been working, I guess, with the party for about, what, 4 or 6 years now?
Well, off and on about 6 years. I've been executive director for the last three.
Excellent. Well, and it's obviously a big year for Alabama politics. It's hard to say where to start, but I guess let's kind of start at the top of the ticket. You got a U.S. Senate race against your junior senator. Tell us about what that race is shaping up like.
Well, currently we have one person that has qualified for that and filed her paperwork. That is Senator Vivian Davis Figures. She is a state senator from Mobile and has been a very active senator over the last few years for Democratic causes and been active around the party.
Yes, and so that race you knew was coming. It's up every 6 years. And then, of course, I guess there was one open seat you've known about for a little while, Republican retired. That's down in the Montgomery, I know, is included in that
district.
Right,
down into the Wiregrass, the 2nd Congressional District.
Yes, tell us about that race.
Well, Terry Everett is retiring, the Republican, in that seat. And we have a good list forming of candidates. The top name that we're hearing is Mayor of Montgomery, Bobby Bright. There is also another announcement this last week of Cheryl Sable, who is the state president of NOW, the National Organization for Women. So that's the two headliners we've got right now. I hear there are others that will announce possibly in the next few weeks.
Yes, and so that'll be a pretty big race. It includes Montgomery,
right?
And I know that they can, a lot of, you know, it's called the Wiregrass. Some people refer to it, and I'm not sure how popular that term is anymore.
In Alabama, it's very popular, but other areas might not know it.
No, there's another, the Black Belt,
right? Well,
across Alabama, and you would think that those demographics would be very much in our favor for returning the 2nd District to the Democratic column.
Well, I think it can be. It's shaping up to be a good race, and judging on the presidential primary numbers, it could be a very competitive race, which we look forward to getting involved in and winning in November.
Yes. Well, how did it go? I mean, Barack Obama won pretty handily in Alabama, but what was the, as far as like total Democratic votes to total Republican votes throughout the state, how did that break down?
It was close to even. The Republicans outpolled us just a little bit in a standalone presidential primary. So that was a good thing, I think, to showing them that even though that we were just a few votes short, it was still good that it was standalone. There were other nobody else on the ballot, so it was a pretty good indicator that we could be in play in November.
Yes, and I guess that was also one thing to remember there is I guess you had Romney and Huckabee and McCain all still very viable
right.
at that point, whereas like in Mississippi this past Tuesday, there was no race on
right,
the public.
Right, it was the John McCain show there. So,
so that definitely says then with two competitive primaries, it was about even.
It was, and it was really a good turnout in a lot of areas that were around the state that were polling that historically had been Republican areas that were like an 80-20 Republican area were polling 50-50.
Wow.
And it's amazing, you know, the turnout.
What about the 2nd District in particular and seeing that's going to be one of the battlegrounds?
The 2nd District in particular has a higher African-American vote. It is a lot of – has a military. It's both Fort Rucker and Maxwell Air Force are in the 2nd. So there's a good military background. It's a big farming area, too. That's probably Alabama's most prolific farmers, especially the peanuts down in the Dothan area. So it has a lot of variety in the district and a lot of good, solid Democrats all across the district. And we have a lot of the of county elected officials in those areas and state representatives and state senators. But the big thing is Mayor Bright kicked off his campaign in Dale County down in the heart of the Wiregrass where he was from. But he's mayor of Montgomery, so it makes, you know, he has the – kind of the luxury of having of being from one area of the district and living in another one now.
Yeah, so two fronts, if you will.
Right.
Well, and I guess then that brings us to the what I guess for a lot of folks from the outside was a surprise, Bud Kramer's retirement.
That was a surprise. We got word Thursday afternoon that he was indeed not going to run again, and I think as soon as we got it, the phone started ringing with potential people wanting to line up and talk about the district and the makeup of it and what needed to be done. So we're still in the process, although no one is qualified with us yet. I think it, you know, give them a few days, and we'll start seeing some paperwork come in.
Well, what's the qualification process in Alabama? Is it a more open-ended process?
It is. They have to file a paperwork with us just and pay a qualifying fee to the party, and the fee's like $3,300. It's 2% of their salary for Senate or House, and then they have to also file, of course, on the federal level with FEC and the Speaker's office. But it's going to be a competitive race up there. We're hearing several names batted around, and people are weighing it up right now to see what, you know, if they want to get in this or not. This is the 5th congressional district has historically been a strong Democratic district through the years. In fact, I don't think we've looked back as far as we can, and the 5th has never been represented by a Republican except during the Reconstruction period. So
yeah,
it's been 140 years ago.
Yes, and the reason I ask that is Georgia and some other states, you have like a week, actually four full days and one half business day to file.
Oh, really?
And so that's a different process,
yeah.
Which I guess it kind of keeps things going exciting all the way through. And is there a deadline, though?
Yeah, state law closes it on April 4th at 5 p.m.
So you have pretty much from
March,
you know, all along.
Right, March 1st. We opened it on March 1st, Saturday, March 1st, and then we will close April 4th at 5 p.m.
So a little over a month.
Right.
Okay. Well, Tim, do you have any questions for Jim Spearman?
Yes, sir. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions, and they're about that 5th district. I had heard, for starters, that you were interviewed and you said that you had actually talked to Representative Kramer a few days before and he had given you no indication that of an impending retirement. Does this indicate that he made his decision almost overnight?
Well, number one, first I'll correct you a little bit there. I haven't talked with Congressman Kramer. Someone in our chairman has.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I really haven't talked with him, so I can't answer that to say if he made a decision. I do know that some of his colleagues did not know it and until right before the announcement was made. So
I see.
I think it may have been a sudden that he, according to Several people, though, I've talked with in his staff, and that there is there was a project that he wanted to finish, and when he saw that project through, he had been thinking about this for several years, and the project was about to be completed, so he said it was time to go on then.
Yeah, I understand. Now, because he was, I guess what we would call a blue dog.
Right.
He was one of the more conservative Democrats in Congress. Do you think that it would take another blue dog to hold that district for the Democrats, or is that race a little more wide open than that?
Well, I think it's a little more wide open. I think that Congressman Kramer was very comfortable where he was. I still think it's a conservative-leaning district, even though it's a Democratic district. It's old Roosevelt Democrats and from the TVA era in that benefited so much from that era. And now we have, Redstone Arsenal there, NASA's in there, lots of defense contractors. So that does give it a more conservative tilt somewhat. But it's still also, Huntsville is home of some very progressive Democrats also. So I think you have a strange kind of mix there with you have rural over in the Jackson County on the Georgia-Tennessee line, very rural area, very strong Democratic county, Jackson County. It goes on over to the Shoals area, Florence, Muscle Shoals, Sheffield area, Tuscumbia, the home of Hal Heflin. So I think you have that has a strong labor group in that area. So I think you've got all different groups represented throughout the district, and I think you'll see some big names jump in on this. That not necessarily, they're good Democrats, but not, I don't say that they're conservative or liberal. They're Democrats that represent the area.
Okay, thank you, sir. David?
Yes, well, I guess one of the questions I had for you is there's been a lot of controversy about the 60 Minutes special. Any thoughts on that you can share with us?
Well, my thoughts are that we have questions, of course, in Alabama on whether there was selective prosecution or if there was some problem with the court system because of the makeup of the people that are running. The U.S. attorney's husband was basically worked in the campaign of Governor Riley, worked for Karl Rove, was friends with Andy Card at the White House, worked at the RNC, makes you question things, first of all, and then you have all these other things that have hit. So the best thing to do would be for the U.S. Attorney General to step forward and just name a special prosecutor to look at this and assure the people of Alabama that, and the nation, too, that there was nothing wrong.
Yeah. Well, I guess when closing, is there anything you want to share with the people that we hadn't gotten to?
Well, I mean, we've got, like I say, two congressional districts and possibly a third one in play. The third congressional district in Alabama is one to look at also with Joshua Siegel.
Oh, yes. Don't forget that. That's right. I guess that goes from Gadsden to Auburn all the way
down
the Georgia-Alabama line.
It goes
down
Cherokee County down into Auburn and on over into part of Montgomery, too. So it covers a huge area.
I guess, and at one point, I think that district actually had a more competitive Democrat-Republican vote ratio than did the Montgomery district, the second.
It still does, and it's a very competitive district. I think that it mirrors the second district a lot, so it could be another with the right presidential candidate out there or a fired-up Democratic base, then you will see that that congressional district come into play too, I think. So, and Mike Rogers has not always been the strongest Republican candidate for them out there, I think. So he could be in trouble also.
Yeah, so four big races
could be.
That you have, and I guess you do have Democratic incumbents. You have Arthur Davis.
Right, Arthur Davis, and of course that was our other Democratic incumbent, and I don't know of anybody that he will have heard of anyone running in primary or general election a candidate against him, so he's very strong.
Excellent. Well, and I guess the plan is, like I said, we cover Southern politics here on the Kudzu Vine, so we want to have more and more Alabama talk. You'll be welcome to come on, I believe, your chair, Joe Turnham.
Right.
He can come on, other folks, so we can, candidates even. We've been having a lot of candidates come on. We have one from Georgia today. We have Mississippi candidates. We've had Virginia candidates.
Wow.
So, want to keep people coming.
Sounds good. We appreciate the opportunity, and just tell your listeners that they can also come on to our website and look at, different things we have posted there. It's at www.aladems.com. aladems.org, aladems.org.
Yes, and obviously we also we got our posting of the Mooncat at
right.
Left in Alabama, promoted a post I did, and has been
right.
Very friendly to the, you know,
expanding
the show.
She's been very
out.
Good for the party, too. She's done a lot of work for us.
Yes, so we're trying to get moving to Alabama strong, too, and this has been a great entry into it.
Sounds great, David.
Well, thanks again for joining us.
I enjoyed it. Anytime.
Sure thing. Okay.
All right. Goodbye.
Yes. Well, it's good to get another state under our belt, if you will, finding about the lay of the land. Another state where they're going to have some good competitive races, Tim.
Absolutely. This Alabama was suddenly the center of the political universe the other day with the announcement by Representative Kramer that he wasn't going to run, and that is going to be a race that we are all going to be watching in November, David.
Yes, and you just have to think that second district's a great pickup opportunity, too.
Absolutely.
And I was
interested to hear him talking about the third district, which I hadn't even thought about being as a pickup opportunity. So it sounds like the state of Alabama is coming back for the Democrats this year. I'm really excited about our prospects in the South, aren't you?
Well, yes, and this is where the 50 number comes up from. Even if it's a bit inflated, it's still this is where it comes from when you start picking up seats in Alabama and not just the reliable states lately like Illinois that's
well,
so Democratic.
It goes deeper than that. You remember a couple of years ago when Howard Dean took over as DNC chair, and he mentioned a 50-state strategy, and everybody said, oh, wah, 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 and went to life. They're not laughing today, are they?
No, because, I mean, you have a chance to pick up one in Mississippi, pick up one in Alabama, pick up one, hopefully, in Georgia, some, you know, different things like that. It starts to
add up.
But I will say this is one thing that out states like Alabama and Mississippi have in their favor is the Republicans didn't get control of the legislature and then gut the Democratic districts like they did here in Georgia.
Yep.
That's a big difference. Well,
yep.
I guess when we talk a minute or two about taxes and then get to the outrage, I know people are probably missing that from last week. We'll have to make sure we also post that as a link to the show because I know people really enjoy that, and actually people will start commenting on it when it's posted at Blog for Democracy or Condi's Tavern or wherever it gets posted. I think usually it gets BFD on that particular part. But the tax plan, both Sonny Perdue and Casey Cagle came out against not only the overall Glenn tax, which that thing was so dead, but then even the car tax portion of it, they both came out against it. What were your thoughts on that, Tim?
Well, you read what Governor Perdue said. I think they posted the whole thing over there on Tundy's Tavern. And the interesting comment about it was you would have thought the first few lines of that would have been from a big-name Democrat. I mean, the governor just pounded on this thing, and it just lets me know one thing, David, with him and Casey Cagle both in opposition to it. This thing's DOA, too, isn't it?
It is, and honestly, I mean, to me, the car tax and the gasoline tax, you have to have something there to pay for roads. You know,
right.
George always likes to pride itself on, you know, road building and ability to have good roads, and, they, you know, that's supposed to bring industry in.
Well,
I know you have to pay for these roads, but personally, I like the car tax, even though it's a hassle to get my car tag, better than the gasoline tax, because if I choose to drive, and I do, a very inexpensive little Saturn, used Saturn, my car tag's not very much, but then if my gas I put in it, it's going to be the same even if somebody has a Rolls Royce.
Well, David, you know these Republican House members pushed this thing through at the last minute because they wanted to take this thing home with them in their pockets and campaign in the fall and beat the Democrats over the head with it. Well, they're going to have a hard time doing that now that their lieutenant governor and governor have both voiced opposition to it. So that shot that right down, didn't it?
Yes. Now, one thing, speaking of the lieutenant governor, because obviously Sonny Perdue, I mean, there's a scenario where he gets on the ballot again as governor. But Casey Cagle, you know, if he does plan on running for governor in, you know, in two and a half more years in 2010, To me, this is the kind of thing that will really hurt him in the general, I'm sorry, in the Republican primary. Don't you feel that's the case?
Yeah, I do. And just frankly, I don't believe he's going to do it if Isaacson does. I mean, you know, I know that's another issue, but maybe that's why he went ahead and said what was on his mind.
And it could then, but then it could, so this is the kind of thing, taxes for the Republicans is just such a huge thing. It may be this kind of thing would hurt him in, you know, 2014. I mean, and I'll say this, looking at Johnny Isaacson, I just don't know if this guy's still serving in 2018. I just don't, I mean, he seems
that's
a little long.
And you're right, Casey Cagle is a young fella in his early 40s, and he does really represent the future of the Republican Party in Georgia, doesn't he?
I mean, obviously Johnny Isaacson, he's just, the guy looks, you know, he's been around since 1990 on a statewide level, and he wasn't young at that time. I mean, you just got to think. I mean, and I guess maybe this is the trend in the Republican Party with McCain. I mean, it's like, let's find guys from, you know, pre-baby boomer.
It's like they ought to rename it the Grand Old White Men's Party, right?
Grand and old.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, because I guess they've got people like Herman Cain, and he still fits the grand and the old. I don't know. It's just interesting that that's the situation there. Well, Tim, I guess we got about 5 minutes left on the show, and that seems like the time for your outrage of the week.
Okay, David. I was so interested in this that I held it over from last week. A lot of folks in the state GOP were angry when Libertarian Republican Paul Brown, who was a guest on the Kudzu Vine, an Athens physician, won the special election in the 10th District last year, replacing the late Charlie Norwood. After all, this outsider had the audacity to defeat their anointed candidate. So the Republicans began recruiting for a challenger to Brown, and they found one, House Majority Whip Barry Fleming. But now we hear we have a new candidate in the mix, and let's see. Oh, no, it's Nancy Schaefer, not her again. About 10 years ago, I attended a debate in Rome that was broadcast on WSB-TV. You remember it, David. You were there. The moderator was Bill Nigut, and the candidates in this particular debate were running for the Republican nomination for governor. Among those candidates was Nancy Schaefer. They were all asked a question about reforming prisoners through education, and Senator Schaefer showed us all just how, should I say, strange she can be with her answer. When her turn came, she indicated that it would be much better for prisoners if they were taught a trade like watchmaking. What? Watchmaking? And just where are they going to parlay that skill into a job? Are they moving to Switzerland? Or are we going to parole all of them and deport them to some sweatshop in China? This past week, she again gave us her strange side when she told a radio talk show host that Paul Brown, and I quote here, Paul Brown had the votes from the Democrats to get him elected. Say what? In the 10th District? I hate to break this to Senator Schaefer, but the 10th District is about two-thirds Republican, or it has been to this point, and there's no way that the Democrats could have gotten anyone elected over there. They couldn't even get one of their own into the runoff in a multi-candidate race. I have a question. What is this woman thinking? Please tell me that there is some logic there somewhere. I can't find it because she keeps saying strange things like this. But of far more importance than us just making a little fun of her is the fact that State Senator Schaefer would be a disaster as a member of the U.S. Congress. It's bad enough that she's in political office at all. She needs to be beaten. She needs to be gone. Now, I know that we have listeners from the 10th District from both parties, and I would like to implore you folks to totally reject Nancy Schaefer at the ballot box. There are three announced Republicans in that race, including her. You folks make sure she finishes fourth. It's in your hands. Her election would be the outrage of the year, David.
And as you were doing your outrage, another excellent outrage, I Googled Scientology and watchmaking, and there's 2,580 results. Maybe the Scientologists are into watchmaking. That explains it.
You remembered that, didn't you? Because we made fun of it that night.
Well, who can forget? I think it was actually campaigned upon, honestly. But and our pre-talk before the show, I think, blends in with our actual show, and I almost forget what we've talked about, but I don't think we've talked about a follow-up from last week's show. But Mr. Joel Gill, that was in the debate last week with Mr. Andy Eads, he won that election by 6 points, and he'll be the Democratic nominee. He actually called me up today and wanted to thank us again for the show, but he told me something interesting. He and Mr. Eads outpolled the Republicans somewhere in the neighborhood of 80,000 to 53,000. And then if you took all the votes together and put them in a thing, he won 21 of 28 counties in that congressional district. So that's some pretty hopeful things in what's considered the most Republican congressional district. And in the first district up in the north end of the state, Travis Childers had 41% of the vote, and the second leading candidate, Steve Holland, had the 31% of the vote. So Travis Childers, while he didn't end the thing on election night, it was several candidates in that race, he still had a strong 41% lead for the April 1st runoff. So just a little follow-up there, but I'll go ahead and announce our guest for next week. Past state party chair Bobby Kahn will be our special guest on Easter Sunday. Most Easter Sunday activities involve going to church in the morning, lunch and Easter egg hunts in the afternoon, so hopefully us being on with a kudzu vine at 7 Eastern time won't inhibit anybody's Easter activities next week. But we'll see you then.
Sounds good. Good night.